Good morning, everyone. I asked the rector permission to break into our normal pattern of sermons that have been planned for some months. Would you agree with me that we live in politically turbulent times? We all know that during the past week, the Conservative members of Parliament have been voting for a leader, whittling the numbers down to two. We all know that one of the really big issues that's bedeviled UK politics for many years now, and will do certainly for the coming months, is our relationship with our neighbouring countries of Europe. How close should we be? How much should our laws and practices be decided in other places rather than in Westminster? And we all know that by the end of next month, we should have a new Prime Minister, a new resident at this famous address. But of course, it's not just in Europe, is it? In Hong Kong, there's been real civil unrest because of relationships with the neighbouring giant of China. In Argentina, where Olive has many relatives, an enormous country which we visited a couple of times, almost the entire country had an electricity power strike, didn't they? Power cut. Just recently, which affected one or two other countries as well. We haven't heard what caused it, what's going on there. They have political turmoil in that country too. So we've looked at Asia, we've looked at Africa, and then we've looked at South America rather. And now we look at Africa, and we know that in Egypt, the former president died in prison a few days ago under the most mysterious of circumstances. What's going on there? So it seems to me highly appropriate that we should ask ourselves what the Bible should say about the Christian and politics. Can I remind you of what was famously reported as Lord Melbourne, former Prime Minister of this country, who, when Wilberforce was agitating for the abolition of the slave trade, is reported as saying, "Things have come to a pretty pass when religion is allowed to invade public life." Things have come to a pretty pass when religion is allowed to invade public life. Well, I believe that the Bible has three great strands of teaching about politics and government. The first line of teaching is this: government can be and should be a God-given benefit, a God-given benefit to people. But why should it be a God-given benefit? Well, first of all, to prevent chaos. In Romans chapter 13, verse 4, we're told that the government is God's servant for good. Now, through history, there have been some terrible examples of countries in chaos. The most famous example in biblical history is, of course, described for us in the seventh book of the Old Testament, the book of the Judges, when there was considerable chaos in the national life of Israel. And it was all epitomized in that terrible phrase that everybody did what was right in their own eyes. Political, civil chaos. And today we have a phrase, I don't know when it was invented, but I've only really become aware of it in the last few decades, the idea of the failed state. The failed state. And in recent decades, there have been countries around the world in chaos, haven't there? We cannot afford to be cynical about politics or about government. And that is a massive temptation for people today, including Christians. In Romans chapter 13, we're told that we should respect the authorities. Why? Because in verse 7 it says they are to be God's servants. God's servants. And remember, that can apply to people even who do not believe in God at all. And the most famous example, perhaps in the Old Testament, was Cyrus. Now, there are two great reasons why government can be a God-given benefit. The first, to prevent chaos. And the second, especially, the Bible emphasizes again and again, to care for those who are poor, to care for those who are poor. The greatest victims of chaos are always the poor, the vulnerable. The powerful always come out on top, whether it's through their brains or their brawn. One of the great tasks of government, of leadership, is to care for the poor and the vulnerable. And the wise man in Proverbs chapter 21, verse 13. Well, it may have been a wise man, Solomon, but it could have been a woman. Most of the Proverbs, we don't know where they came from, said this: beware of shutting your ears to the cry of the poor, for one day ears may be shut against your cry too. Beware of shutting your ears to the cry of the poor. Chapter 21, verse 13. And so in Jesus' ministry, he was asked this tricky question, wasn't he? By people who were deliberately trying to trap him. It was a really cunning question. First of all, they tried soft soap. Oh, Jesus, you're a wonderful teacher. You're not frightened of anybody. Can you guide us? Is it right to pay our taxes to the Roman occupying power? Remember, Jesus grew up in an occupied country. Many of us have never lived in an occupied country. Some of you may have done, but most of us haven't. And in that instance, we are one of the most rare countries in the continent of Europe. Most other countries have known what it is, either to be defeated and occupied, or in some other way, to be under the control of others. Jesus grew up in that kind of country. And this question was so cunning, because if Jesus had said, no, we shouldn't pay taxes to the occupying country, that could have led to immediate rioting and great loss of life. If he'd have said, yes, we should pay our taxes, he would have faced the fury of the people who hated the Roman occupying powers and hated the tax collectors, because most of them were on the fiddle. Here is a picture of a Roman coin from Julius Caesar's time. Sort of coin that may have been shown to Jesus. Well, that's the first great theme in Bible teaching about government. It should be a God-given benefit. But there's a second great theme as well, right through the Bible, and that is this: the government, the powerful, must be just in the exercise of their powers, of their government. And through the Bible, we get example after example of civil disobedience. When it has seemed to people who believe in God and justice and right that they should disobey the government for a greater good. I was born in a country that's famous for the campaign of civil disobedience led by Mahatma Gandhi. I was alive at the time, just. And that was a famous, peaceful series of actions of civil disobedience. But in the Bible, perhaps one of the first and most famous is in Exodus chapter 1, where the government, the Pharaoh and his leaders had decreed that because of the great fear that they had of the growth of the Hebrew slaves, that they would become a great power that would challenge the Egyptians themselves. They would kill all the boy babies. And some of the midwives said, "We're not going to do this." And Moses' mother said, "I'm not going to do this." Civil disobedience. Perhaps the most famous stories in the Bible are in the book of Daniel, where, first of all, the government said you're to worship the idol of Nebuchadnezzar. Everyone must bow down and worship this idol. But Daniel's friends said, "We're not going to do that." And then the government issued another decree and said, for a whole month, you can only pray to the dictator, the Führer, the leader, the president. And Daniel said, "I'm not going to do that." Civil disobedience. And then when we turn to the New Testament, we come to the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 4. And we find that the apostles, early preachers, were arrested because their preaching caused some disturbance and unrest. And they were told, "Well, you can go away free, provided that you no longer preach about Jesus." And their famous answer: "You must decide whether we should obey God or human beings. But let it be known that as far as we're concerned, we will not stop preaching the good news about Jesus." And of course, the early Christians paid a heavy price for their civil disobedience. The government, the powerful, must be just. And we, living in a democracy, must continually hold them to account, both at national level and at local level. Where sometimes the most strange things happen about planning applications. They must be just. They must be fair. And so that leads us to the third line of biblical teaching about government. And it's this: because of the previous two lines, that government is to be a God-given benefit, but it must be just, we are called to pray regularly and faithfully for those in government and in power And that's why we had our first Bible reading from Paul's first letter to Timothy, chapter 2. I urge you, as a matter of first importance, to pray for those in authority so that we might live peaceful and quiet lives. So that we won't be a failed state. So that there won't be chaos. So that the poor and vulnerable will not be trodden underfoot. When we get to the very last book of the Bible, Revelation, we find a shocking chapter, 13, which seems to be describing the victory of uncontrolled evil. It's a frightening chapter. The beast coming out of the sea. What was the writer talking about with his apocalyptic code? Well, it seems as if he was talking about episodes in history when evil seems to be taking over. In his own day, presumably the Roman Empire, which sometimes described itself as the Pax Romana, the Roman peace. But of course, it was only a peace if you did as you were told. And there were terrible periods of persecution and violence. But in the last century, many of you will want to apply it to National Socialism, to communism. And of course, we have also witnessed the terrible tyrannies in Cambodia and Rwanda. And I could go on, couldn't I? But lest we be complacent, as we live in a country which is easily in the top 10 of the most prosperous countries of the world, how concerned are our governments about homelessness? No government of either political colour or coalition since 1950 has built even half of the houses that they said they would in their manifestos. And that's why the scandal of homelessness grows and grows. And even when the houses are being thrown up at great speed, they're often not the appropriate houses that are needed by the people most in need. And here in our own country, in the last 5 years, we've had a growing divide between the rich and the poor. We are called to pray for our government, not to be cynical, but to be prayerful. We must give to Caesar what is Caesar's, gladly pay our taxes, and our role, so far as we can in government, provided that we give to God what rightly belongs to God. May God have mercy on this country in the coming months. Amen.